Welcome to First Post Masterclass, a brand new podcast series where elite athletes break down their craft for you. My name is Shantanu Srivastava, and joining me in this episode is former India wicketkeeper Deep Das Gupta. Deep has represented India in 8 tests and 5 ODIs, besides serving Bengal in 83 first-class games. Now an accomplished commentator, Deep will explain the science behind wicketkeeping.
Hi Shantanu.
Hi Deep, how are you doing?
I'm good. You tell me what's happening with you.
All good, yes. I hope it's the same with you. How are you coping with lockdown?
Yeah. It's been all right. Not too bad.
Yeah.
Not too bad. I'm trying to look at it as positively as possible and catching up on stuff that I always wanted to.
Right. And in normal circumstances, this would have been the IPL days and you would have been very busy with various commitments.
Yeah. To be honest, I'm not thinking about it.
Yeah.
Because... I mean, there's nothing good that is going to come out of it.
Yeah.
Right. So the idea is either you look at it and think, you know what, I've got a break. Like anyways, you have generally a break after IPL for a couple of months anyway. So I'm just looking at one of those breaks and and doing stuff that I always wanted to.
Right.
You know, reading and spending time and whatever. Doing a course and, you know, things like that.
Yeah. Great. So Deep, before I get to the technical aspects of the of the questions, let me ask you this. Do you remember your test debut?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yes, I do.
Can you take me through those times when you were handed your test cap?
Listen, at that point in time, it wasn't like, you know, being handed over a test cap kind of a thing. Right? You were just told you're playing and that's that. And mine came as a bit of a accident because I wasn't supposed to play that test.
Right.
Okay, it was Sameer Bhige who was supposed to play that test match. And morning of the game, Sameer had a back spasm. So so I came to know that I'm playing that test match roughly. I mean, generally what happens is you give practice to the guys who are playing. So I wasn't playing, right? So I was, I don't know, giving catches to someone. And then corner of my eye, I saw Sameer speaking to Saurabh. And he had his hand on his back.
Okay.
So something told me that, you know, it's some, I mean, not everything is right. So then what I saw after that conversation, all this I was noticing while I was getting catches and all, corner of my eye, all this stuff was happening. And then, what I noticed was after that, Saurabh was approaching me. And this is like he's in his wife and he's going for the toss with a team in his hand.
Okay.
And he comes to me and he says, you're playing.
Oh.
I was like, sorry, what was that? He's like, you're playing. I was like, oh, okay, thanks. And I ran inside and got my gloves. And then, see, everyone has their own routine for a game. So I hurriedly kind of finished routine. And by the time I was, you know, taking catches and all, we had, I think, I don't know, I don't remember, we lost the toss or we won the toss.
I think we lost the toss. Yeah, but we batted first.
Batted first. Bottom line is we batted first. And before I could realize, within half an hour or first hour or something, I had put on my pads. So I was sitting padded up because I was supposed to come after that partnership between Giru and Sachin. So I was maybe to bat at six. So I was all padded up. And so before I could realize and peek in the whole thing, I was in the game. And then obviously that partnership happened and I went out. So the whole thing sunk in only later in the evening when I came back to my room and my parents, my family was like, okay, you're not playing, fine. Suddenly they were surprised to see me playing in the playing 11. So and then, I was having a chat and all that, brilliant. And then I remember my elder brother saying, you know what, you're a test player. There's something that nobody can take that away from. And then it sunk in and it's like, yeah, you're right.
You were still in your early 20s and, what an amazing feeling.
I was 23, I believe. And yes, it was. I mean, listen, at that point in time, I mean, even now, playing for your country, you're playing, especially cricket for India, is if you, that'll be the number one dream for all kids.
Yeah.
at least in India.
Mm-hmm.
So this, yeah, dream coming true, a different feeling altogether. And and listen, test cricket is test cricket.
Yeah.
I'd made my one day debut before that. But
right, right. On the same tour, I guess, right?
Yeah, yeah, same.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Okay, so how did cricket happen to you? And were you always keen into wicket keeping?
Excuse me. No, not really, actually. Cricket, again, I was always, I mean, I'm the 83 generation, right?
Yeah.
So I was, what, I was six there.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in my senses and I could comprehend what people were talking at that age. And for those 2 years, and then 85 happened, so 83 and then 85 happened,
yeah.
right? So that point in time, everyone was talking about cricket. I mean, you go to any relative's place, they were talking about cricket. You go downstairs to play and everyone was playing cricket.
Mm-hmm.
Sit home, I mean, sit on the table for dinner, and everyone's talking about cricket.
Mm-hmm.
So it was cricket all over. So cricket was something that I always wanted to play.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no two ways about it.
Yeah.
I mean, like any other kid.
Right.
But then what happened was my elder brother was a national athlete. He was a Delhi state champion in 100, 200 and all that. I was in Delhi then.
Okay.
So it was a 100, 200 champion and all
mm-hmm.
that. So he used to go to national stadium for training.
Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. For coaching and all.
Yeah.
And he's like 9 years, almost 9 years elder.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, what, 6, 7 then,
mm-hmm.
so they couldn't leave me at home, so my mom used to take me along.
Okay.
But then what happened was that I, again, wanted to play cricket, but I was
mm-hmm.
too young, so there was some rule that you have to be 11 or 12 years old at NIS to be part of cricket.
Mm-hmm.
So I was not, but obviously I had to go, so what I did was, that is the only sport that you could be enrolled in was gymnastics.
Okay.
So I started with gymnastics, but after the month, what I used to do is finish with my warm-up gymnastics and run towards the cricket enclosure
oh.
and would stand outside the fence and watch guys play cricket
mm-hmm.
and practice cricket.
Mm-hmm.
So after like a month or so, it was Gushan Singh. Gushan sir
yeah,
was
yeah, yeah.
the coach there.
Mm-hmm.
Gushan sir said, called me one day. He's like, why do you keep standing there?
Mm-hmm.
He's like, listen, I'm in gymnastics, but I don't want to do gymnastics. I want to play cricket.
Right.
So from then on, he's like, okay, officially you can't. Then he spoke to my parents and he says, listen, officially I can't take him in,
mm-hmm.
but let him come and, you know, just
mm-hmm.
hang around the boys, let him throw balls. And
yeah.
So he would give practice to everyone and then suddenly I would be standing there looking at everything and after everything, he would give me a few catches.
Mm-hmm.
So it all started like that and then slowly became more serious and that's that.
Mm-hmm. So started as a batsman?
I always, I mean, something very early, I realized I can't bowl.
Okay.
So, and something that really, I really liked doing was diving around,
yeah.
messing about.
Yeah.
So, I was like keeping, yeah, and I also kind of, so I was batting only then, and
yeah.
I was, what, I was 7, 8, and then I realized this, and I mean, I'd be standing somewhere while somebody else is bowling, somebody else is batting, and I was like, yeah, nothing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So then I realized, you know, I was getting bored and all,
mm-hmm.
you know, just standing there. So I started keeping because that's then you're part of the game.
Yeah, right.
And I loved it. I enjoyed it because, you know, you're in the thick of things. You're always there. I was like, yeah, and this sounds cool.
Right. That's how wicket keeping started.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I wanted to know, see, most of the wicket keepers that we see in international cricket are quite chatty in nature, but perhaps it's part of the job also. But what if someone is not that kind of a person? Does one need to develop that? Is it?
Not really. Like, for example, I wouldn't call myself a chatty or an extrovert. I mean, MSD for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
But what I honestly think is, You're not being chatty for the heck of being chatty.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some guys who are naturally chatty. So like, let's say a DK or a Parthiv,
mm-hmm.
Or a Rishabh in this case. But
right.
you have, on the other side, you have someone like Riddhi who's
mm-hmm.
not chatty, who's an introvert.
Mm-hmm.
MSD, I mean, I was like that. I'm kind of still am.
Mm-hmm.
So well, the issue is then you realize that you have to be. This is part of your job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you are the fielding captain.
Yeah.
You are a leader.
Mm-hmm.
So it comes, then you start I mean, I'm still fighting with this idea. I'm not too sure about the answer, whether keeping teaches you to be a leader or you have to be a natural leader to be a keeper.
Right.
Because if it, I mean, you are a leader, a keeper is a leader.
Right.
So it's, so so the job itself, even if you're not a natural, but the job itself will teach you to be one.
Yeah. Right. So you see, wicketkeepers form perhaps the nucleus of the fielding team when the team is on the field. But yet they say that you notice a keeper only when he or she has dropped a chance or, you know, missed a stumping or something. Is that, do you think that is, I mean, in a way that is nice, but do you think wicketkeepers in general are appreciated enough? Because you might make a good catch or stop a good, you know, a bye or something.
No, they're not. They're not. Because it's as we all keep saying this, it's a thankless job and everything else. But, you know, the nuances of the game, of keeping for that matter, it's not spoken enough of. And the reason being very simple. The reason being the fact that, okay, I mean, let's say you've done 10 interviews, right?
Right.
Media. How many of those 10 individuals that you've interviewed would be a wicketkeeper and on wicketkeeper?
Very few, if any.
Right? If any.
Yeah.
So most of them would be batsmen.
Right.
Then comes your bowlers. So then you're looking at the sport from a batsman or a bowler's perspective.
Right. It's always bat and ball.
Right?
Right.
So if I'm a batsman, if you ask me a question, I'll always look at it from a batter's point of view. And I'll try and give you that perspective.
Right.
So if you look at the media for the last 30 odd years, how many wicketkeepers have been part of the media?
Right.
Or broadcast or anything. So it's difficult to get a keeper's perspective.
Right.
So that is something that slowly, I mean, things are changing. There's no two ways about it. And also, when you see something really good, you will appreciate. I mean, there's no two ways about it. You will appreciate. But yeah, I mean, the nuances of wicketkeeping, I don't think we talk enough of it.
Right. Well, so much happens. Every ball is an event for a wicketkeeper. And even if it's a casual leave by a batsman, you don't normally notice where the keeper is collecting the ball, how he is going about it. Those things are never discussed.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's only because, I mean, to a great extent, not only, to a great extent, because, like I said, I mean, the keeping perspective, who brings the keeping perspective? A keeper will bring it, right? So that's where I think we need more keepers talking about the game as well, not just playing, obviously, but talking about the game as well.
So broadly speaking, and we'll get into the specific as we go along, but broadly speaking, what are the key ingredients of a good wicketkeeper?
I think for me, technique in general, there are two parts to it. One are negotiable, and which is the major part of technique. And there are very few things, and the other part is non-negotiable, right? For example, you know, the usual stuff like soft hands, giving in or soft hands, either way, you know, when you get up with the ball. So there are, unfortunately with keeping, there, the other important thing is there aren't enough keeper coaches. Right? So no offense to all the coaches. I mean, I mean there are coaches who understand keeping. Absolutely yes. But, you know, so things like getting up with the ball and, you know, soft hands, these are very vague things.
Right.
Now, when we keep talking about, right? But how do you define them? So there are few things that are which are non-negotiable. So, for example, soft hand or give, for that matter. You know, you give in. MS Dhoni doesn't give in. Right? It's the other way around. He actually he goes towards the ball rather than lets the ball come to him.
Right.
Why is he? Why can he do that? Because he's got extremely soft hands, so he doesn't really need to give. So his palms, he's got thick palms, he's got soft hands. So the absorption, because you give in, I mean, that's the reason you give in, right? Because he's got soft hands and thick palms, so that absorption happens anyway.
Naturally, yeah.
Naturally. Mm. So now, a lot of young keepers try to emulate that, that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then the problem is, they don't understand what you need.
Mm.
You know, to make that happen.
Yeah, yeah, right.
So, I mean, so there is very different ways to get around the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, the non-negotiables are like, for me, is non-movement.
Mm-hmm.
As in, I again, I'm one of the believers that you don't really need to move a lot.
Okay.
For me, you don't need to move.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the the more you move, the more you'll make mistakes, is what I think.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, is getting up with the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The attitude.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's huge.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't, I mean, you have to be have the right kind of attitude and all that.
Mm-hmm.
These are things, I mean, the mental side of things, because, again, keeping is something, as we all know, it's a thankless job. So if you don't have the right attitude and the right mindset,
mm-hmm.
it's very difficult.
Right. Okay, so is it a bit like batting in more ways than one? I mean, you need to keep eye on the ball and still head and movement.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The basics are the same,
mm-hmm.
right? It's the same. For example, you can't be falling over in batting, right? Your head can't go outside the base.
Right.
Same with keeping.
Mm-hmm.
So it only goes as much outside the base so that you're on the balls of your feet.
Right.
Any further, then you topple over.
Yeah.
It's like that. So there are slight changes to those, but
mm-hmm.
the basic template remains the same.
Right.
It's like staying still. You don't move while batting, do you?
Yeah.
You're told the same thing, so don't move. It's the same thing with cricket.
Right.
I mean, with wicket keeping.
Mm-hmm.
You don't move a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You move only as much as you're required to.
Right. And like batting, is visualization an important part of keeping also? Do you,
I mean, yes, it is. It is.
Okay.
It is. I mean, especially on surfaces, because the thing is, for example, you might be keeping somebody for the first time.
Mm. Right.
You know, and on a surface, you don't know the surface is going to be. And supposedly, you're keeping to Anil on a surface that's going to be, that's like very, very spin friendly. Then you'll start visualizing how you're going to gather it,
mm-hmm.
you know, if it bounces and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's that.
Mm-hmm.
I think, yeah. I mean, visualization, it's not just about cricket, in anything you do.
Right.
I mean, it's a great tool.
Mm-hmm. So when you visualize during your playing days, would you visualize collecting balls or affecting a dismissal?
Was more to do with collecting balls,
mm-hmm.
because see, dismissals will happen. I would also visualize dismissals in terms of edges.
Right.
So, you know, you would want to slow down the process as much as possible and
mm-hmm.
and visualize the ball coming and hitting the outside edge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
See, a lot of that started happening with me because these are all self-taught things.
Right.
I mean, when we were playing, at least at that age, early 20s or before that, till that age,
mm-hmm.
I mean, visualization wasn't something that we had heard of.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Those terms have only mm-hmm. come in the last decade or so.
Right.
So we did what we did. I mean,
mm-hmm.
ask somebody to throw balls and you take catches or you get into the net and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because the other thing with keeping that didn't happen often enough was thinking about the game. Today, a lot of people are thinking about techniques, batting technique, bowling technique.
Okay.
You know, there's a lot of research going around biomechanics and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you heard about biomechanics in bowling and batting.
Right.
I don't remember hearing about wicket-keeping, biomechanics and wicket-keeping.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, so all that does, I mean, yeah, I mean, people have started talking about keeping techniques and all that, but it's, so, I mean, growing up, you just did what you heard. I mean, get up with the ball. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, till then, I did not realize what gets up with the ball. I'm sure you've heard that term before, get up with the ball. But what gets up with the ball? Is it your backside, your hand? What gets up with the ball? Is it your head?
Mm-hmm.
You just get up with the ball.
Right.
Oh, I stiff hands. I mean, he's got hard hands. I mean, what does hard hands mean?
Yeah.
So at that point in time, there are all these terms floating around, and people would say that, and you would follow, okay, hard hands. I have hard hands. I am fumbling because I have hard hands.
Mm-hmm.
But never realize what exactly hard hands meant.
Mm-hmm. So, see, you've talked about rising with the ball, and perhaps earlier people didn't know what exactly does it mean. But, you know, when do you start rising? We see, for the spinners, you understand the pace is slower, so you can ride the bounce in a way. But with pacers, do you actually rise with the bounce, or do you stand in a half?
For pacers, I tell the kids, you don't have to sit. So one of the non-negotiables is the power position in keeping.
Okay.
And now what is the power position? Is the squat position that you mentioned.
Right.
Now that is something that is an absolute non-negotiable, in the sense that you have to stay there in that position.
Mm-hmm.
The longer you stay in that position, the better you are.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my point is, for a fast bowler, why do you really have to go down?
Mm-hmm.
Why can't you be in that squat position, which is more relaxed,
right.
Less stress on your muscles,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So, if you're all the way down, you have to come back to that position anyways, right?
Right.
Chances are you don't have to go back down there with your mm-hmm. backside anyways.
Right.
So, why sit down there?
Mm-hmm.
I think you're just wasting energy trying to get up from that position to squat position.
Right.
The chances, like I said, you don't have to go back down.
Right.
Your hands will be down there anyway,
mm-hmm.
even if your hips come up in that squat position. So,
mm-hmm.
so yeah, I mean, for seamers, I don't find any reason why people should go, squat all the way down. Absolutely
right.
No reason.
Right. And even if we see somebody like Gilchrist, he never used to go full squat, crouching position to fast bowlers. That could be because of the pitches he kept on. But, you know, somebody...
Even in India, I'm saying.
Yeah.
For example, Riddhi is doing that of late.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you need to? If mm-hmm. you're in that squat position, in that power position,
mm-hmm.
and to stay in that power position, you do need proper leg muscles and strength, right?
Right.
But at least that is more relaxed position. That is more natural position than actually squatting down. So you are squatting down. You're putting more stress on your leg muscles, on your knee joints, your hip joints. Which you don't need to.
Yeah.
Right? End of the day, you have to keep for 90 overs, mm-hmm. and you know the stress builds up.
Mm-hmm.
And end of the day, the last session is when you start feeling it.
Right.
And over a period of time, you start feeling it. For example, I still have a tight abductor.
Mm-hmm.
It's because I was told always to squat,
mm-hmm.
squat all the way down.
Right. And, so how do you rest your weight? So on the balls of the toes, or evenly spread on both the feet? How apart should the feet be? Could you talk about the stance?
Right. For spinners, right? Spinners, for me, I think whatever the distance between the feet is, whatever comes naturally.
Okay.
Right? Whatever your natural balance is,
mm-hmm.
right? Everyone has a natural balance. So when you are standing normally,
mm-hmm.
your distance between your two feet will be different from mine,
right.
when we're standing easy,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
That's the distance that I would recommend
mm-hmm.
for any wicketkeeper.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you why. Because if you're not in that natural position, that distance, first thing that will happen is your body automatically, naturally would want to get into that
right.
distance. So you make that subconscious foot movement.
Right.
Because your body is trying to get into a balance.
Yeah.
Right? So you see a lot of the wicket keepers subconsciously have a little movement either with their left foot or their right foot.
Right.
That's because the body is not in a resting or a comfortable position
mm-hmm.
or in a balanced position.
Mm-hmm.
So the distance, I would say, is that
mm-hmm.
where you would naturally stand and walk to someone,
mm-hmm.
you know, relaxing.
Mm-hmm.
The body weight would be on the balls now, on the balls of the feet is not toes.
Mm.
You're where the heel of your shoe is in contact with the ground, but the heel inside is not
okay.
that much, right? So, if you close your eyes and you're standing normally with body weight on your feet.
Yeah.
Move slightly forward,
mm-hmm.
and then you'll realize that heel goes up just a little bit.
Right.
Right? And that's that.
Yeah.
Anything more, you will topple over.
Right.
And anything going back on your heel, then you're on your heel, then the body weight's on your heel. So
Right. It's
on the balls of your feet, which is, somewhere near the arch, just in front of it. The arch is your midpoint,
mm-hmm.
then the body weight is just a little further up.
Right. Okay. So let's talk about hands. You said you spoke about soft hands. But if somebody doesn't naturally understand what soft hand means, or it's a bit fidgety in nature, so how does one attain that that ideal softness, if I may say, in the palm?
So I would say, but ideally speaking, I'm one of those guys who would give them practice and tell them, and it's all about a feel, right?
Mm-hmm.
The idea is everything's about the feel. You pick up a bat and you like it.
Mm.
It's got nothing to do with weight, balance, and all this. Mm. I mean, then over a period of time, you understand, okay, this is a pattern, so this is my weight.
Mm.
But it's a feel. You pick up a ball, ask the bowler, he'll pick up a ball, and how does he select the ball? He actually feels it.
Right.
The seam looks good, the balance feels good.
Mm-hmm.
So same with keeping. It's about feeling, right? So the idea is it's like you're catching a raw egg,
mm-hmm.
right? It's like that. So you're caressing the ball. You know, you're not letting the ball come hit you thud on the gloves.
Okay.
So it's more like caressing the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Let it come. It's like that.
Okay.
And once you start catching, you start feeling that. You know, you kind of visualizing and feeling.
Mm-hmm.
There is a rhythm.
Right.
You know, if you're catching the ball. So that rhythm is very important.
Mm-hmm.
Everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that rhythm is very important. Find your own rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
And find that feel of that ball coming into your hand, just like softly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So is there a sweet spot in the palm also? I mean, is there an ideal spot? Some people catch with the fingers, some in the center of the palm.
No, not fingers. Never, ever.
Mm-hmm.
Never, ever.
Okay.
Never, ever with the fingers.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that's like half and half. So
yeah.
If you're catching with obviously both your hands, so it's like half and half. So it's like your palm, your inside of the palm.
Mm-hmm.
Starting from little finger, you don't really use the little finger a lot,
mm-hmm.
so it's like most of the palm side, inside
mm-hmm.
half the palm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and let's talk about receiving the ball. Some people do it with their bodies behind the hand, some do it with the bodies beside the hand. Is there one position that one should go for, or depends on the wickets also? How do you decide that?
Catching, where do I catch?
Yeah. The hand position while you receive the ball.
Okay, so I am a big believer of beside the body.
Okay.
Right, because that's something that I struggle with.
Mm-hmm.
Because what happens is on Indian tracks with less bounce,
mm-hmm.
you will manage,
mm-hmm.
right? Because your hands below your waist,
mm-hmm.
if the bounce is below your waist, around knee height, you will manage. But
mm-hmm.
once it starts bouncing a little more,
mm-hmm.
then you're cramped for space because you can't give.
Right.
Till knee height, just below the waist, you have enough space to give.
Mm-hmm.
But once it starts bouncing over waist, you cannot give.
Mm-hmm.
You're stuck.
Yeah.
Right? And that's the reason,
mm-hmm.
even though a lot of youngsters, they're like, it doesn't bounce. I mean, in junior figure or whatever, it doesn't bounce more
mm-hmm.
than knee or your waist, especially
mm-hmm.
when you perform.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a habit that you need to get into besides the ball.
Right.
And what also happens with beside the ball is you can follow the ball better.
Mm-hmm.
You can ride the bounce, you can
mm-hmm.
ride the turn.
Mm-hmm.
Your body can move better because once you keep your hands inside the body,
mm-hmm.
you know,
you can't
move as, you're not as mobile.
Right. So how does one avoid confusion with the first slip? A lot of times we see, no catches going between slips and keeper. Does one talk to the slip coordinator to say this area is earmarked for me, I'll go for that kind of catch?
No, you just go for everything.
Okay.
You just, listen, you can't think. I think it happens during practice.
Right.
During practice, you'll have the same guy standing in first slip and second slip.
Hmm.
So, during practice, you build up that rapport with your first slip and second slip,
mm-hmm.
and you're like, okay, this is the distance that I'd want. This is this is as much as I can dive, and this is what you can do, and then you figure that out.
So you were fairly tall, but there are a number of people who suggest that shorter keepers are benefit because they can move easy sideways and they have lower center of gravity. Do you think that is the right notion?
It helps. I mean, listen, you're more agile. I mean, the lower your center of gravity is, the more agile you are. So, I mean, there's no doubt about that. So it does help. But the idea is then, as someone who's on the taller side, let's say, you just have to stay lower. You've got to have strong legs to make sure that you don't get up. And that's that.
Okay. And what's the trick to keeping to spinners? I mean, and also with spinners, did you, even in nets or at international domestic level, were there any spinners that really tested you?
Oh, I mean, listen, Anil and Bhaji, they're brilliant. They're absolutely brilliant. They tested everyone, not just me. They tested the batsman, they tested the left fielder, everyone. So, I mean, at that point, when I was actually speaking to them and first QCD, it was, I did not realize, I mean, I was doing the same thing that I was told. Get up with the ball. What gets up with the ball, I mean, they didn't never told you. So I was getting up with the ball and I was great. Because the wrong thing was getting up with the ball. Then, obviously, I was catching within my body. So obviously, those two got a lot of bounce. So I was getting stuck. I mean, every ball, almost every ball would bounce my waist side or above. So I would get stuck. So those are things which, after a while, I figured out. I was like, listen, I mean, by the time it was too late, but my last series was the Australia series, and I kept in a few side games, and I had worked that out. I changed my keeping style. I wouldn't go squat all the way down. I wouldn't move a lot. Because the whole idea about movement is, oh, people talk about footwork. I think footwork is overrated. I mean, how much do you really need to move? It's the timing of the footwork. That's a different issue.
Right.
It's not football. You don't have to move a lot. I mean, even if you're keeping to a fast bowler, I mean, how much distance do you practically cover or realistically cover first day, which is what? One body length? But the idea is if you're moving at the point of the edge, your body is in motion. You can't dive there.
Right.
Till the time you land and then... So my point is those things are things which I develop and figure out on my own, and those are the things I keep telling the kids now, and those are things I do for spinners. I mean, not get behind the ball, make sure my hip gets up early, my hands get up with the ball, make sure I'm not moving too much, in a half a step on the offside, leg side, when do I move as late as possible. You know, those are those checkpoints that you look at, look at this. Those checklists which, I mean, with experience, with trial and error, I kind of stumbled upon.
Yeah, so a lot of wicket keepers stand behind the wickets when they keep to pacers, and they stand beside the wicket when they keep to spinners.
The concept is you have to see the path of the ball.
Right.
I don't care where you stand. As long as you see the ball for the longest time is where you stand. So the idea is to watch the ball. The longest that you can watch.
Okay.
So, and that's what it is. So I mean, you can stand on the off stump or you can stand outside of stump, as long as you can watch the ball. So the idea is you can only catch the ball when you watch the ball. Right. So the longest you can, I mean, the biggest challenge for a keeper is the batsman in front of you, right? And the blind spot. So if you can negate the blind spot as much as possible, so you stand in that kind of a position or you take that kind of a position.
It must be particularly tough to keep two spinners bowling around the wicket, right-arm spinner bowling to a right-handed around the wicket, isn't it?
Right-hand spinner to a right-hander around the wicket.
Yeah.
Not necessarily, again. The idea is yes. So growing up, that was one of the things I'd say. For a spinner, your left foot would be on the off stump.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I have to tell kids now, I'd say stay outside off stump.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of bowlers would bowl round the wicket, on the rough and all.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is if you imagine the angle, if you're mm-hmm. standing on with your left foot on the off stump,
yeah.
the batsman's right in front of you.
Right.
So then you start thinking, if I go outside, what if it goes to the leg side? It's like, mm-hmm. I can't manage.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea is if you're standing on the off stump,
mm-hmm.
you're not seeing the ball anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not giving yourself any chance.
Right.
So stand outside off stump. As long as you're watching the ball, if you can watch the ball,
mm-hmm.
you will gather it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what you learn. That's what you've been practicing is
right.
watching the ball, and instinctively your body will follow. If your foot
mm-hmm.
doesn't,
mm-hmm.
your hands will go, and if your hands don't, you will dive.
Mm-hmm.
But you will catch them. But the point is, so those are the things which I know it's a little difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people, don't understand that.
Mm-hmm. And how important is communication with bowlers? I mean, should the bowlers communicate to the keeper that they are trying a variation or trying a different line? I know it's not possible every time, but if they're trying something really different, somebody's trying to reverse.
So that the communication is very important.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where keepers have to be the best communicators in the side.
Mm-hmm.
Communication in the sense, a spinner, for example, you have a bowler who has variation. So
mm-hmm.
you work that out.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, keepers, they are taught to pick up from the wrist.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, one of the first things when I was part of the Indian team, one of the first things I did was tell Anil Bhai and Bhaji, after the next session, can you bowl me 12 deliveries
mm-hmm.
and bowl all your variations? So, mm-hmm. I know your variations from the relief point.
Okay.
Right. And as far as reversing now is going, it's the other way around. You
mm-hmm.
start reversing, you're one of the first person to realize it's reversing.
Right.
And then you go tell the captain, you tell the bowlers,
mm-hmm.
is it reversing?
Mm-hmm.
So as a keeper, and that's the reason you see when a lot of batsmen have problems picking up googlies and stuff,
mm-hmm.
very few wicket keepers actually have that problem.
Right, because you're trained to pick it from the hand.
Yes.
Okay. And, over the years, we have seen the focus shifting from wicketkeeper batsmen to batsman wicketkeepers. Right? And does this trend worry you in a sense as a traditionalist?
Not really. Because it's always been that case.
Mm.
Right? I mean, the last 20, 30 years.
Mm.
Because, now how does a wicketkeeper come into prominence?
Mm.
Right? When do you know about the wicketkeeper, a young wicketkeeper? When he's scoring runs?
Mm-hmm.
Right, you don't get a name in the newspaper if you've taken two brilliant catches
mm-hmm.
or you've kept really well.
Mm-hmm.
You score 100 and you get your name in the papers.
Right.
So the first time you actually start hearing about a wicket keeper when he starts scoring runs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a new phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you hear of someone, it's like, oh, he's a good batsman, he's a keeper as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go watch him, or and you say, he's a good keeper as well.
Mm-hmm.
My point is that's how the process is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So did you take your batting as seriously as your keeping?
Oh yeah, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So I would always do something.
Mm-hmm.
Either if I'm not batting, if I was out there practicing for 3 hours, I made sure I was doing something.
Mm-hmm. And did your keeping instincts or training help you in any way with your batting? Because you said you could read the ball from the hand easily, you could read the pitch.
Yeah, absolutely, yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the reason, ideally speaking, wicket keepers can open. You see a lot of keepers, you ask them, that helps them because,
mm-hmm.
for example, you've kept for 50 overs,
mm-hmm.
you know that pitch better than anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
You know the turn, you know the bounce,
mm-hmm.
you know how it's behaving.
Mm-hmm.
And then it makes things easier for you to plan in terms of your batting.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, you opened in Test cricket also for India, and but you know, most of them were in after you have kept for the entire day. So should keepers be asked to or made to open in Test matches because of the sheer stress involved in the job?
I mean, that's the biggest challenge. It's the stress of keeping for, let's say, 80 overs and then coming out to bat. Mm-hmm. And you're talking at the highest level. Mm-hmm. If your foot is marginally late, your footwork is marginally late, your back is marginally late, split second. Mm-hmm. I mean, split second difference would make the difference between middle of the bat and the edge of the bat.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that's the reason it is extremely difficult. There are positives to it, like I said.
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest drawback is the stress. I mean, not just physically, even mentally.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right, and in West Indies, now we're talking about your career a bit. You were keeping wickets for India in West Indies, and Carl Hooper, there was a tough chance you dropped, and he went on to score 200. And then we know Kiran More dropped Gooch and scored 300. When these kind of incidents happen and the batsman goes on to score a big one, how difficult is it to shake off that, that thing?
It is difficult, and one of the things that, again, it took me a while to learn was how to handle that. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, you don't realize as much in domestic cricket or even club and all that, local cricket. But at international level, that can be very, very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to handle that. I mean, it happens. So what I kept telling myself, at that point in time, it was tough because that's something that I kind of struggled with at that point. Mm-hmm. But later I realized when I actually, there was a span between my West Indies series and the last series in Australia. So that was a span of 6 to 8 months
mm-hmm.
where I had time to actually sit back and realize and have a look at the whole process again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I started looking at this aspect as in, okay, I've dropped and what do I do now?
Mm-hmm.
And I started thinking, listen, it's just part of the game. Everyone drops it.
Right.
I mean, one of my favorite wicketkeepers is Ian Healy. He dropped the catch of Brian Lara and they lost the series.
Right.
Right. Mm. So it happens to the best of wicketkeepers. So,
Just can't keep brooding.
Yeah, can't keep brooding. So now, then what I started doing was, I started having a checklist. It's like, okay, what happened here?
Mm.
Okay, I switched off for that split second.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a concentration issue? Was that a physical thing? My hands were too stiff. Am I nervous or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
So I started having a checklist as in what went wrong,
mm-hmm.
and then I figured out a way to get out of that. Mm-hmm. For example, if I was nervous, then I would have a way of finding a way to not be nervous.
Mm-hmm.
Get my mind off it.
Mm-hmm.
So those skills I started developing a little later in my career, unfortunately, but I did develop those, and that's that.
Mm-hmm. See, Deep, a lot of people talk about Dhoni's dumpings, and you also briefly touched upon it a while back. I mean, he like you said, his hands go towards the ball instead of ball coming to his hands, and then still they manages to keep a soft palm and affect those dismissals. Yeah. Is it something very natural, or can this technique be, can you get used to this kind of technique?
You can.
Mm-hmm.
You can.
Mm-hmm.
So the most important thing is you've got to have really soft hands.
Mm-hmm.
So even at the point of impact, your hands have to be as supple as possible. MLC has big palms. Mm-hmm. He's got good cushioning.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of that is also natural. I mean, the cushioning part. I mean, if you have thick palms and a lot of cushioning in your palms, it makes things easier.
Mm-hmm.
But you can always try and do that with a lot of catching with tennis ball,
mm-hmm.
soft ball catching. So you develop the soft hands, because the point is, the most important part of that technique is having a soft hand
mm-hmm.
at the point of impact. At the point of impact, your hands can't be hard.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that's what you do. So you then practice accordingly.
Mm-hmm. I think keepers have these days gone more street smart. Like, we see a lot of keepers removing their gloves when it comes to grand situation, one or two runs required of last ball.
I mean, these are all things, again, because a lot of thought has gone into keeping.
Yeah.
right? How and credit to MSG for that, because what MSG did was he was never, I remember playing with him. We were in the same team, his own team and all.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have an orthodox style of keeping or batting. Mm-hmm. He was very unorthodox in how he batted and he kept.
Mm-hmm.
But the good thing what he did was he did not try and change his technique.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. But what he tried and do was keep his basic technique going, mm-hmm. and work on the non-negotiables, mm-hmm. like soft hands and stuff like that. Right? Not moving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, keeping his eyes on the ball and just be very, very stable with his body weight and stuff like that, his balance.
Mm-hmm.
So if you start working on those non-negotiables, and what has happened is everyone started thinking about it. When you see someone unorthodox and being successful, then you start wondering, as in, what is he doing?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then you start thinking about it and you find out ways and you find answers.
Mm-hmm. Just wanted to take, you know, there's a lot of talk about Rishabh Pant's keeping, KL Rahul coming in. Is he a makeshift arrangement or is he good enough? What is your take on all of these things? Because MS Dhoni is not going to be there forever. We have to find a keeper.
Yeah.
Right?
I think KL is good, but you also have to start looking for other options as well. I mean, I think KL is a very good cricketer.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good keeper as well, and he's a guy who's kept before.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping is not alien to him. Mm-hmm. He was a wicket keeper during his underage cricket.
Mm-hmm.
Right, till under 19, mm-hmm. he would keep wickets.
Mm-hmm.
So he understands mm-hmm. the nuances of being a wicket keeper batsman.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, you also want to not lose him
mm-hmm.
as a batsman across all three formats, because he's a class act.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, you've got to keep someone like Rishabh, and mm-hmm. there are other keepers coming through, and you know, you've got to keep looking for those keepers.
Mm-hmm. But as an expert, you see the basics are there, the technique and everything.
Oh yeah. I think KL is very good. He's got soft hand.
Mm-hmm.
I think he has the right position
mm-hmm.
in terms of, because I think what getting up with the ball, that whole thing, which mm-hmm. is a big, big pet peeve that I have.
Mm-hmm.
I think all that stuff is good. He's mm-hmm. he's really good.
Okay.
So there is no two ways about it. I mm-hmm. think he's really good,
mm-hmm.
and he understands, and he's a good reader.
Right?
He's somebody you know will figure out if he's made a mistake, he'll find a way around
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm. Right, last one. Would you like to give any advice to the keepers, young keepers coming up, those who are listening to us?
Well, all I'll say is have fun and please think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Just one thing I keep telling all youngsters, irrespective of wicket keepers or batsmen or bowlers,
mm-hmm.
please ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody asks you to do something, please ask why.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you have that knowledge, then it'll be easier for you to coach yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because, for example, you meet, let's say, MSG today.
Mm-hmm.
You have that opportunity. You might not have an opportunity in the future again.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're asking him something, also ask why.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. If the coach tells you to do something, mm-hmm. please ask the reason why. So
mm-hmm.
it's not, you're not questioning the coach. Mm-hmm. You're basically mm-hmm. trying to understand mm-hmm. the basics behind doing what it's doing. Because
right.
Listen, like I said, there's a lot of it which is non-negotiable, which,
mm-hmm.
you know, you can have your own way of getting to that result.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if you know the reasons, then you can actually find your way.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't necessarily have to be anyone else's way.
Right. All right, Deep. That was great talking to you. Thoroughly enjoyed this conversation.
Pleasure, Shantan.
Thank you so much for sparing time out for us.
All right, not a problem. Not a problem. Anytime. Thanks. Take care. Bye.
So that was Deep Dasgupta with his insights on wicketkeeping. Hope you enjoyed listening to it. And don't forget to tune in for the next edition of First Post Masterclass. Until then, stay safe and goodbye.